Maybe some of you have never done this before in your life. It's not compulsory. I don't want you to feel guilty if you don't want to do it. But if you've never done it before, can I encourage you to pick up a pew Bible and open it with me? Maybe this will be a first for some of you here this morning. We're talking about encountering God through the Bible. So surely it's appropriate to open the Bible if you feel comfortable and want to do that. And the page number to find is page 1213 at the back of the Bible. 1213, it says James at the top of the page. It's the first chapter of the book of James, the letter of James, and the verses to locate are in the right-hand column, just about a third of the way down. Do you see the paragraph headed Listening and Doing? And here comes our belated epistle reading. We didn't have it in the normal place because we're having it as part of the sermon, as Bridget says. And James says this, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everybody should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word printed in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word means Bible there, and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anybody who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror, and after looking at himself or herself, goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they've heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do." I think that in some way these verses can sound a bit fierce, a little bit like a sergeant major on the parade ground with a squad of new recruits, and he's shouting at them, "Don't just listen to what I say, do what I say." And maybe he puts that in very colourful language, not suitable for the pulpit. And I think the reading does have a little bit of an element of that, a little bit of do what I say. But I see the main emphasis as rather different. And what I find here is something that comes again and again in the Bible. And the message is this, that if you and I want to meet with God, if you and I want to know God and experience his blessings in our lives, the way in which this is going to happen, or one of the key ways in which this is going to happen, is as we respond positively to what is written for us in this book. If you've got the Bible open, just look at verse 21 again. Get rid of all moral filth. Humbly accept the word which is planted in you. Humbly accept the message of the Bible that you've heard, which can save you. It's the message of this book which brings us to God and his salvation in our lives. And when God saves us, it means that God forgives us. It means that God gives us new life, the gift of his Holy Spirit, his daily strength, his guidance, his hope, and many blessings with it. In other words, the Bible is one of the means by which people like you and me can come to know God. Think about any daily relationship that you have, any friendship that you have. What happens in this friendship? Answer, you talk with one another. You communicate with one another. You send emails to one another. You send texts to one another. You send photographs to one another. All the time you're communicating with one another so that the relationship will grow and develop. Doesn't mean you always send really kind messages to one another. You may want to tell the other person off for offending you or something like that. But you communicate with one another. So it is with God. How does he communicate with us? Well, one of the key ways in which he communicates with us is through the message of this book. And then when he communicates with us, we are to respond to him in worship and in prayer. Look down again at verse 25. Whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they've heard but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do. If we want to know God's freedom in our lives, if we want to be more and more the unique people that he has created us to be, the message is clear. Listen to the word, hear it, and put it into action. Doesn't mean that we've got a guarantee of a trouble-free and ever happy life. No, sometimes God's blessings involve receiving his help and strength to keep us going in situations that can be desperately difficult. Meeting God in and through the Bible, finding God's freedom and liberty as we respond positively to the word of God. That's the message for this morning. That's actually the words of Jesus. Don't bother to look it up, but it's in John's Gospel, chapter 8 and verse 31. That's a key verse, really repeating what's said in James, or preceding what is said in James. Jesus says this to the Jews who believed in him: if you hold to my teaching, if you hold to what's in here, you're really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. That's great, isn't it? If we want to know freedom from God, then we hold to the teaching of Jesus. We continue in it. Last week, we bought a new Hoover. You'll see the point of this in a moment, I hope. We had our last Hoover, a very good Hoover, and it lasted 14 years, and it did some heroic work in our house. But then came the day when it made some terrible noises and breathed its last and gave up the ghost. And we called an electrician to certify that it was truly dead. And so we had to spend rather a lot of money, I'm afraid, on buying a new Hoover. And it arrived in a little packet like this. I thought it would be a much longer thing, but it arrived in a packet where I took the bits out, and it all had to be assembled together. And mercifully, there was a book of instructions about how to do it. And I can tell you that in my past life, I have thought that I was cleverer than the maker's instructions. I haven't bothered them with the maker's instructions. I thought, I know how to put this together, and 2 hours or 3 hours later, I'm still struggling in a hopeless mess, and then I open the maker's instructions and realize I should have done this or that. Anyway, I hope I've learned a bit of sense, and I took out the maker's instructions. I looked at them very carefully. They were very good. They were very simple. And within 20 minutes, I had assembled this Hoover, and I think other people have had the same experience as I've had here with ignoring maker's instructions. I put it all together, I put it in the plug, I pressed the little button, and it worked. Well, of course it did, and the point is obvious, isn't it? For the best results, follow the maker's instructions. It's so obvious, isn't it? If we want to get the best use out of a Hoover, do what the maker says. And if you don't do what the maker says, you can get yourself in a terrible mess and in all sorts of problems. And it's the same with you and me in our daily lives. If we want to make the best use of our lives, we need to look for the maker's instructions. Where do we find the maker's instructions? Well, I don't know anywhere else other than here. The basic maker's instructions, helping us to know God, to find him, to follow him, and all the rest of it. That's what the Bible is about. It was C.S. Lewis who famously said, "The Bible does not tell us how to boil an egg." There are a billion things that the Bible does not tell us. It doesn't tell us how to conduct a complicated medical operation. It doesn't tell us how to go to the moon or anything like that. That is not the purpose of this book. The purpose of this book is to tell us who God is, what he has done, what he can do for you and for me, how it can happen, and how we can work it out in our daily lives. That's the purpose of this book. I said in St. Peter's Church earlier on that Bridget's given me an impossible task this morning, preach about encountering God through the Bible. And let's face it, there's so much that can be said and written about the Bible. Millions of things have been written about the Bible, and I do want to acknowledge that the Bible is not an easy book. It was written, well, thousands of years ago now. It is a collection of 66 books, and it contains all different kinds of writing: history, prophecy, letters, songs of praise, proverbs, and so on. We need to learn how to read the Bible, and we need to learn how not to be literalists. I used to teach in a school. I used to hate it, actually, going to face this class of teenagers when I was a curate. But one of the things that I think made an impact is that I used to have a picture of a pair of legs running round the world. And I said, you know, that's a Bible verse. The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth, that he may show himself strong in the behalf of those who are faithful towards him. And I said, do you believe that God has got a pair of legs and he's running around the world? Of course not. Of course not. We're not meant to take that literally. It's a poetic way of saying that God sees everything. So we need to learn to read the Bible and understand it for what it is. And that's not an easy process. We need help. I can tell you, well, I try to read the Bible every day, and virtually every day I take down something from my bookcase to help me to understand what I'm reading and what it means and how it might apply to my life and to the life of the complicated world in which we live. You know, that's one of the reasons we have sermons in church. That's one of the reasons why Bridget and others preach to us, to help us understand the message of the Bible, to apply it to our lives, to see what it means, and to put it into action. And there's all sorts of things that can help us here. I think it can be quite a difficult thing. If you haven't sort of got into the habit of reading the Bible, it can actually be quite difficult to start. Where on earth do I start with these 66 complicated books? And I've heard some scientists saying the whole thing is rubbish anyway and can safely be ignored. We need help. And there are all sorts of help available. I hope you'll say a word or two more about this when I finish, Bridget. But there are things online. There are notes that you can have to help you to read just a few verses each day. There are commentaries. There's all sorts of things. And I'm sure Bridget has got much better up-to-date information than I can have. Now, there is a place for technical study. That is important. The work of scholarship about the Bible is very important. And if we have difficult questions to answer about the Bible, we can find scholars who will help us. But actually, it's not only a matter of technical study reading the Bible. It's not just a matter of head knowledge. It's a matter of heart knowledge and life knowledge. I want to tell you about a South American called Juan Carlos Ortiz. I heard him speak at a conference about 30 or 40 years ago. And when I was preparing this talk, I thought, well, I'll Google him and see whether he's still alive or what. But he is still alive, and you can have a look at him on the internet, Juan Carlos Ortiz, and he's still a Christian leader in Argentina, and he's still going around the world talking at conferences and all the rest of it. And I heard him speak at this big conference for Christians 30, 40 years ago. And one of the things that he said in his talk was very, very striking, and it stayed in my mind ever since. And he was obviously the leader of a big church in Argentina, and, you know, hundreds of people each Sunday and all the rest of it. One of the things he said about his church was that he will repeat the same sermon Sunday after Sunday if he thinks this is necessary. Well, you think, I'm not coming to the Good Shepherd to hear this sermon next Sunday. Or, I'm not coming back to hear Bridget repeat the same sermon. Once is enough, thank you. Thank you very much. But, listen to this. He explained why he did it. And I can remember the illustration that he gave. And he said, I repeat my sermons until the congregation do something about them. And the illustration that he gave was about those words of St. Paul, about practicing hospitality to one another and to our neighbors, to live out the welcome which God gives to you and me. And so he would preach his heart out, and I imagine he spoke for quite a long time, if I know this man. He would preach his heart out about the importance of demonstrating Christian love, illustrating the welcome of Christ in our lives by being welcome and open-hearted towards our fellow Christians and our neighbors. Okay, the sermon would finish, and away they would go. Then next Sunday morning, you come to church, and what does Juan Carlos Ortiz say at the start of the service? He says, how many of you have invited a friend or neighbor to your house in the last week and given them a cup of tea or offered them a meal? A few hands go up. And how many of you made plans or sent out an invitation for someone to come to your house in the next week or two? A few more hands would go up. Not good enough, he said. We're just meant to be hearers of the, not we're meant to be doers of the word. Hear it, and not just hearers. I must preach the same sermon again. And he did. And he did. And then the next Sunday, he would come into church again and say, how many of you have had a friend or neighbor this week? And a few more shame-faced hands would go up, and people would hide, feeling rather guilty because they hadn't done anything about it. And he would say, I must preach the sermon yet again. And he would preach the same sermon and the gist of it yet again until he really felt that this sermon had made an impact, a practical impact in the lives of that church. Not very Anglican, is it? Good old Church of England. We can't do that here in the Church of England. We can't do that here in Lee. Not very Anglican, not very British. But you know, he got the point, hadn't he? And I hope we've all got the point. We can fill our heads with Bible verses, but until we turn it into action, we are missing the main point. This is a book to change people's lives. If you know anything about Christian history, and this book has changed the world, hasn't it? It has literally changed the world. I'm afraid some people, with their perverted views of this book, have changed the world for the better. For the worse, I mean, sorry, got it wrong. But when this book is really turned into action in the way that it's meant to be, it has changed the world for the better. Do you know that this book is still the world's best-selling book? And maybe it's worth asking ourselves the question, when did we last open the world's best-selling book? This is one of the reasons I wanted to encourage you to open it here in church this morning, in the hope that it might encourage you to open it at home. You will need help. Ask me, ask Bridget, ask someone else you know about how you can do it and how you can make sense of it. But as I say, we can know the Bible backwards, forwards, sideways, upside down, but unless it's turned into prayer and action, it's got only limited value. I don't know whether you'll have the courage to do this next Sunday morning, Bridget. I don't know whether I'll have the courage to do this next Sunday morning, but perhaps we should ask ourselves, have you opened this book since we were in church last Sunday? Have you even considered this? Have you actually opened it? Open something like the Sermon on the Mount. Say a prayer and ask God that will help you to live it more and more and more. I know that I need to preach to myself this morning. Perhaps I need to preach to some of you as well. Let's, with God's help, open this book, read it, learn it, and then put it into action more and more. Amen.